All right, so let's call the meeting to order. We will postpone approval of minutes until October when we're in person. Any public comments? Do we have any public on the line? We have one number that's unidentified. Who is that, Karen?
It might be me. Julia Robinson.
Okay. Hi, Julia.
Hi.
I'm also on, although I'm not sure it's obvious, Jim Foster.
Yes, yours comes up as you.
Okay, it just doesn't come up as me with me, so that's all right. I already know who I am. So.
And, all right, so President's comments. Like I said before, everybody got on. I'm still seeing influenza cases. So the seasons are all mixed up. So just be careful. Not much else is going on my end. So I hope you read through all of the information that they sent out ahead of time, the annual report and the health rankings, so we can have good discussion on those today. So let's move on to, Jen with the health officer's report.
All right. Well, before I have a lot to cram in today, but before I get into all the updates, we've invited the substance use prevention team on. So you'll see Leanne and Jen Fell and Ingrid. I don't know if Pam is on too, but they're actually triple tasking. They're in another meeting right now as well too. So I'm going to give them the floor right away because I know we can't vote on anything because we're virtual, but we're seeking your blessing or your input and advice as we want to move forward on the Kenosha Overdose Response Initiative. So I will have, because it goes before the county board on June 7th. So we wanted to make sure it got to you all first. So I will turn it over to Jen to kind of give a report out of all that that amazing team has been doing.
Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jen. I'm the public health supervisor with Kenosha County. Sorry, I don't have a voice after a weekend of baseball. so I will do my best to be clear. So a little overview. We have now had our full team on since February 18th. And since then, we've conducted 315 Narcan trainings and over almost 400 kits of Narcan have been dispensed. The community partners and trainings that we've conducted have reached a variety of different individuals from churches to bar restaurants, universities like Parkside and Herzing, who will have reoccurrent trainings. Libraries, different fire departments and EMS, local law enforcement. We also now just got approved having Narcan to be in the property of inmates upon release. So the incarcerated population will receive Narcan trainings daily throughout the facility through facility rules. And then they will be offered Narcan upon release if they would like it, along with other community resources for behavioral health and substance use prevention. Within that, we're also right now within the week should have our Spanish translation video for Narcan training for the jail, as well as our Spanish information sheet on Narcan. So if upon release they're asked if they've seen the video or not or gotten instructions, they'll have an English version and a Spanish version. Which is one of the things that we've been working on for a long time. So we're really excited to be able to offer that to the incarcerated population upon release. We've gotten over, we just ordered 2,000 fentanyl test strips for a harm reduction. So those are now available. Community members can get them at our clinic. They're all set up and labeled and ready to go. We just did the drug take back day in partnership with behavioral health at 5 different locations where we provided Narcan training. It was a very rainy and cold day, but we had gotten over 40 trainings done and over 44 kits of Narcan was distributed at that event as well. Our next steps with our CORI team, so our Kenosha Overdose Response Initiative, like Jen said, this will go to the Board of Supervisors to make sure that we can get approval for all of this. But we have done extensive research over the last 3 months or so regarding what our model is going to look like from an evidence-based perspective. So we've looked at over 8 different models throughout the United States of what other areas are doing in response to overdoses. So we are going to mimic ours off of actually Sauk County here in Wisconsin's approach, as they also have more of a public health model that public health does the oversight. And then we work in partnership with EMS, community paramedics, and fire, along with peer support. So there's a team of 3 people that end up going out to make these outreaches within 72 hours after an overdose event. So the goal is to get these folks connected with resources and treatment options, and pretty much meeting them where they're at to see what their needs are. Right now, we're kind of muddling through, you know, what that looks like from our perspective. Things that I have come up with in our model from public health, people paid as the program oversight. So this includes doing all of the implementation, the data.
Hey, Jen, hold that thought, because we're hearing some static. So if everybody else can mute, I don't know where it's coming.
I think it might be the
perfect.
I'm on the phone, Jen. John O'Day.
Oh, John, are you able to mute, maybe?
Am I what?
Are you able to mute? Just because we're getting a lot of feedback.
Okay, I'll just mute it so I...
I just muted some people. Sorry.
No, that worked.
So, so things that public health is going to work on within this team collaboration would be, from an oversight perspective, doing implementation and training of the individuals that are chosen to be on the team, navigating pitfalls and struggles for when they arise. We're looking at contracting with Mike Wright, who actually created the Milwaukee Overdose Response Initiative, as he now runs his own consulting business. So he can give us a lot of feedback on what our program should look like from an evidence-based perspective. We will act as dispatch, so we would all come together to debrief, looking at these individuals to see if they've had touch points with other organizations, if they're already enrolled in services, and that way we can kind of get a better understanding of where that person's coming from before we make that outreach. Resolve conflicts, and then through all of this, conducting quality improvement analysis, and how can we better our programs, what other policies can we put in place to have the best outcomes. You know, it's a quick overview, but that's what we've been working on for the last 12 weeks.
And we would love your input. If you have any more questions for clarification, we'll be putting this all into a mini proposal for the Board of Supervisors in June. And also we'll share that with you as well, too, and as well as all the information will be in the minutes. But any questions or clarifications or input from your communities?
Sounds like a good thorough plan, and looking into Sauk County and other places, then you're not recreating the wheel.
Right.
Well, this is a really unique model, because around the rest of the country, they are largely out of fire departments or sometimes out of other agencies. And so that's partly, I'm guessing, one of the reasons why SAMHSA did fund us, because it was out of a health department. So it's presenting that unique public health behavior change model. And so Jen and her team have been amazing. Kudos, all the research and pulling all of this together to figure out, well, how can this really work best for residents of Kenosha County? And so lots of exciting stuff. And it's a huge, huge program. So, I mean, it's going to take some time to baby step it and get it off the ground. But at least Kenosha County will finally have something going. So thanks, guys.
Yeah. So let me know, reach out if you have any questions. If you know anybody in your communities that would benefit from Narcan training and distribution or fentanyl test strips, reach out and let us know, because we'll be willing to do anything.
They're going to schools, the Tavern League.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of places, churches, all sorts of places have been requesting. So it's been amazing. Well, thanks, guys. You're welcome to stay on if you like, or if you need to jet, because I know you're...
Yeah. We have an overdrive summit that we're in right now. So, yes, we're going to jet out. But thank you for having us. Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you, guys. And also, just in case Leanne has to jet, I am going to have Leanne talk about the PACE campaign, because that's something else that we are hoping for your input on as well, too. So I'll turn it over to Leanne.
Thank you. So I have a billboard here, a yard sign that I brought with me. So you can kind of see it, and then I'll put it down so you can see my face too. So these are some of our yard signs. We have them in green and purple, and our campaign is built around adverse childhood experiences and positive childhood experiences. So we've got the URL, pacekenosha.org, and we have yard signs, we have billboards, I have stickers and message cubes and t-shirts, and we've been working with a local marketing campaign called Westwards, or the local marketing group called Westwards Consulting, to develop this campaign based around ACEs. We want people to take the ACE scores, get their score, and then see if they have those positive experiences in their life, a coach, a teacher, a sports team, things that can help them build those resiliency factors. If they do have childhood trauma, which some of us have when we take our ACE scores, and there are things that we cannot prevent. So making sure that we have those positive experiences in our lives and positive influences in our lives. So with our campaign that launched in the community in March, we also have social media going on. So through our pacekenosha.org, you can go on there. You can take your ACE score and you can share that with your local organizations. We also are asking people to come pick up yard signs if you've got a community organization that would like a yard sign. We have 16 in the green, and then we have also the purple. So we have one that's a female and one that's a male. You can see that it's a shadow of the young girl, and then she's, you know, has her little superhero that she can turn into, so she can change her destiny if she does have some positive childhood experiences to connect with as well. So our billboards have been up in the community since March 7th. They've been changing areas. If you're interested in where those are, I can get the addresses out to you as to where our billboards currently are. And then the yard signs connect with that. We have quite a few up in the community already, but we've got 16 of the green and 16 of the purple still. So if you'd like one for your office or organization, I'm happy to deliver them. We also have, like I said, t-shirts, post-it cubes, and stickers that we can get out to your staff as well to help promote this in the community.
For about a year. Is your organization
I was going to say, if anyone has any questions, I hear Rogelio having a whole conversation in there.
Yeah, I hear that.
There you go.
I have a few questions.
Yes.
I think I missed a beginning part. What initiative is this for?
So we used some of our previous Narcan funding to pay for this. And so we wanted to just make sure we had a comprehensive campaign that focused on ACEs and wasn't literally just a Narcan informational campaign, because we've done that before. And you can say, you know, get trained, save a life, carry Narcan over and over again. And I think we're getting that message out in the community. So we really wanted to get the ACEs message out in the community so people are aware that they could take this training or take this. Take the and learn up what their adverse childhood experience score is, and then build in those positive resiliency factors if they do have trauma that they've experienced in their life. And I know, Dr. Pritchett, you probably have some clients that you work with and in your practice that this might benefit or help connect to.
Yes, I do the ACEs. However, I encourage my clients to do it with caution. If you're going to take this score, where will you immediately go to if it is unpleasant, if it's activating? So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. And change the destiny. I'm wondering how culturally sensitive and trauma-informed is that statement, change your mm-hmm. destiny, because many people's adverse experiences, which I know the ACEs study lacked, you know, they focus on divorce and all of those things, but being born Black is a social determinant, AKA translates, you know, into an adverse experience into how you show up in the world. And mm-hmm. so I know what the study focuses on, but change your destiny, when I heard it, it didn't sit well with me because it just doesn't feel culturally sensitive.
Okay. I appreciate that.
I have a score. What do I do with it? And are there people in place that can help me in my cultural needs based on that score?
Right. So if you go to the site, you can kind of see some of the pieces that we've built into this. We've been working with Kenosha Human Development Services and their counselors over there with crisis, with Karen Van Heinigen and the Substance Abuse Prevention Work Group and Task Force. We kind of had a lot of bodies involved in this. Carrie Foss, Karen Van Heinigen, Guida Brown, Dr. Freiheit, and myself. And then we brought Jen Fell in when she came on board to give their input into this campaign before we kind of stepped out. But I totally agree that, you know, might have misstepped with some of the language, and I appreciate your perspective, and maybe we can talk about that further.
Yeah, but I just have one more question. Of all those people you described, is anyone Black or Brown that was part of that conversation?
Originally, we did have Javon Clausen on our team, and she, you know, left to go to the United Way in October, so she was involved before she left, and she is an African American.
I'll reserve any further questions because I think I'll start talking in circles at that point.
Sure.
But it's definitely not to negate the efforts. Everything is so vital and important to the bigger mission. But that's not the reality of many people once they get that score.
Sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, if you would like to reach out, we can have a further conversation. And if there's different language that we could put on the website that you'd like to help with, I'm happy to listen.
Definitely. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
And I do have a question, Leanne.
Yes.
To kind of expand on what Dr. Pritchett was saying, are there plans to bring any more people of color to the conversation?
So I know this was presented, and Jen might have a little more perspective on this than I do, but I know it was presented at the Equity Task Force. Kirsten Gunderson, who is our public health strategist working with that team, she presented it to them, and they even helped with some of the language before we put things onto our website. And she's making sure that they get the yard signs and the different resources with the task force. So that's the perspective that I know that she brought to the table. And Jen, I don't know if you have any further knowledge on that.
Yeah, so this was a one-time use of funds that had to be spent by August of last year. So it started way back then. And it's just now getting rolled out, you know, COVID and everything else, right? So so as far as moving forward, I think there's certainly room for us to make adjustments, relook at this moving forward, and to look for future funding if we want to make changes. So while this is out there and can't be changed, you know, for example, the yard signs are out there, right? So while that can't be changed right now, I think there's definitely room for improvement in the future and how we can fund it moving forward in a different way. It had a lot of cooks in the kitchen. It had a lot of hands looking at it. And certainly being the first time we had a campaign like this, you know, there's always different angles we can take. So we appreciate your input.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
No, I guess my thought process was that if we're looking at a community based program, that it should be something that kind of fits everybody. And it's, you know, I don't want to sound combative to the initiative because I definitely appreciate the initiative, but I don't want anybody to get lost in the translation.
Understood.
And when they receive their score on the website, it immediately goes to what are the local resources and where can you go? It doesn't leave them hanging per se, although it is a website, right? It's not a live person. So that is that's a definite issue that I know that our Division of Behavioral Health and Kenosha Human Development Services went round and around on, because we aren't the mental health experts. And so we definitely included all of them for how we, you know, how this should go. Definitely heard. Any other questions or comments? All right. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you.
All right. So I'll jump into some of the other updates. COVID update. Let me just pull up my stats and data here, which I just had open and now it went somewhere. All right. So we will likely hit the medium yellow category by the end of this week. So if you were looking at the CDC metrics, you know, we stayed in the green for a nice little while here, and cases are going up, hospitalizations are slightly going up. So we'll likely hit that by the end of this week. What does that mean? Does it mean everybody goes back to masking? Not necessarily. You know, certainly people with immunocompromised conditions or those that are in the high risk category, which is those over 60, should be more cautious. So the numbers that will be put in the minutes as well, cases are up 179 per 100,000 over the last 7 days. In the weeks prior, they were 100 to 120. Hospitalizations in the past were at about 3 to 6 hospitalizations across our 2 hospital systems. And now we're up to 10. This was as of Friday. So our latest data has 10 patients currently hospitalized across the 2 systems. And if our hospitalizations reach 10 per 100K, then we move to yellow regardless of the case levels. Right now they're at 7.4 per 100K over the course of 7 days. So definitely cases and hospitalizations are moving up. Does that mean it's a big wave? Not necessarily. I mean, it's hard, you know, we don't have the crystal ball to know where this will go. Certainly with the warm weather outside and summertime and windows open and people getting out more, that helps with ventilation. And looking at the past 2 years, if you look at that as a baseline, we had a post spring break bump that could be part of this. And then we will usually see in the fall the big spike that moves into the winter time. So that is likely to happen again this year with the different variants that crop up. But it's impossible to sort of say where this will go and what will happen. So people over 50 should get their second booster, and we're certainly having people come to our clinic for that. And that's where COVID stands as of now. So we'll continue to send out the biweekly sit reps to give the rest of the community alert on that, and you know, you put things on our social media and all of that. As also with COVID, our disease investigation team, just for a little recap for some of you, in the summer of 2020, in that second wave that we were that was so big at the time until we had our other waves after that, we had hired 45 to 50 temporary staff using the special COVID monies that we got from the state to hire temporary staff to help us do all the disease investigation and contact tracing that was mandated by state statute. So to be able to keep up with that, we had a large pool of temporary staff that we had to onboard and train. Throughout last spring, through the vaccination clinics and when COVID cases went way down, we lost many of those temporary staff. They went on to get permanent jobs elsewhere. And so we maintained a small cadre of 12 to 15 temporary staff throughout the fall wave, which we were not able to keep up with 100% of disease investigation. And then by January's Omicron wave, we obviously were snowed under. We've been able to maintain now about 8 to 10 temporary staff. Most of them are part-time, not full-time. So a very tiny amount of staff to keep up. And with the Omicron surge, there was also the state medical director, state medical officer had put out the memo that corrected the, as the state medical officer can do, that corrected that we don't have to disease investigate and contact trace every case. And it was impossible across the country to be able to keep up with that. So that because it's no longer a novel, unique virus, it's been around, you know, over 2 years, and B, because the whole disease investigation contact tracing process was, it's a public health tactic when we can control a virus. Well, clearly we can't control COVID, it's everywhere. So that's what alleviated our statutory responsibility to have to disease investigate everyone. So we've definitely lost a number of people. The people we're keeping on, we're moving to a focus of vaccination and education. We're still getting requests for mobile vaccine clinics at various churches and businesses. And so we're fulfilling those requests. Still lots of education going on out there. But I just wanted you to know that should another wave occur again, clearly we're not going to be able to disease investigate and contact trace everybody. Given the staff we have, nor will we be statutorily required to do so. The other component is this, with the numbers I spat out earlier, was that not everybody's getting tested. Many people have mild cases. They're not getting tested at all. Many people are doing home tests, which don't get reported through the public health system at all. So we largely suspect that our case count in Kenosha County is probably way higher, and we will never necessarily know how high that is. So like Dr. Pritchett said, you know, it seems like a lot of people are getting COVID right now, just anecdotally, but we have no way of quantifying that. So it sort of removes public health from the ability to really use good science and quantify it epidemiologically to make good recommendations. So the best I can do is give you where we're at based upon the number of tests and the numbers that we have right now. But certainly, you know, as we're hearing nationwide as well, it seems that things are going up. Any questions on COVID?
Yeah. So, God, it's so scary to think about what if, you know, there's a more significant wave. Do you think that the state and even our city, like, are we equipped, like, with PPE, like, all the stuff that we struggled with during the first wave of it? What's our readiness for a possible second hit?
Yeah, so that's a broad question. So let me address PPE first. We had, 400,000 masks, I think, we distributed in January, N95, KN95 masks. And so I think that there is potential for the state to distribute masks again. We gave all of ours away. We have no stockpile now. But I think there's potential for more to come. The PPE for hospitals and long-term care facilities, they've been stocking up. I don't believe there is any sort of shortage, at least on every hospital call we're on. Nobody's stating that they're even close to a shortage or need. But there's always that potential, too, from the stockpile for extra PPE for those facilities. As far as you know, it really is on individual responsibility now and what people feel they need to do to protect themselves. And especially with home tests, the state's also talking about health departments being able to finally deliver rapid antigen tests that people could literally just come pick up at our clinic. Mm-hmm. So more to come on that. But again, that's not reportable. So yeah. For us to be able to track that from a preparedness sense, like you were talking about, is virtually impossible. So the best that public health will be able to do is continue vaccinating, continue educating, and continue putting out information to the public so that people can make their own informed decisions.
Yeah.
So on the hospital side, I don't think the PPE is a shortage issue or anything, at least for us, but there are multiple medication shortages. Mm. Needle shortages, saline flush, medications, you name it. That's where the problem is going to be, I think, because our hospital are his patients and that we don't have the medication for them.
Wow.
There's even a nationwide shortage for IV contrast for doing scans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one more question. So remember a few board meetings ago, we were talking about having a dialogue with KUSD and the school system. Have whatever took place with that in terms of them reporting numbers and tracking and tracing, how was that influenced in all of this?
With KUSD, they are still reporting on their website their numbers and cases. And I'm sorry, what was the other part of the question? So they are
just what was kind of the update with them, because I know they were weird, for lack of better words, about sharing reports or even reporting to us. But I think, I don't know, just wondering what happened with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they still have, they had hired on their own contact tracers. I am not sure since the January memo that sort of alleviated that. I don't know if they still have their contact tracers, but they still do report their known cases on their websites.
Thank you.
All right, moving on into not COVID news. You all were sent the county health rankings that was consolidated into a 2-page report. And this was part of the packet sent out ahead of time. This, just to be clear, every year there's a the national organization that just happens to be in Madison in our backyard, but they do every county in the country. It is helpful and useful information to sort of see where the county ranks. And we combine that into our total community health assessment data. So it is, think of it as one piece of the data pie, very valuable piece, but it is just one piece. And so it's an early piece that comes out usually in February, March of every year. It didn't come out till April, just a couple weeks ago. But we consolidated that for you. One thing that our epidemiologist wanted to point out was that while our numbers looked to be better in some areas, it was not necessarily because Kenosha County got better. It was because other counties got much worse. So so just wanted to point that out epidemiologically, that that's why in some areas it looks like we improved, but we still certainly have issues with air quality, asthma, mammograms for the underinsured, you know, all of the issues that you see in there. And as we will talk about all of this over the summer, you all will be pulled into the community health assessment and reviewing the questionnaire for that. Next month, actually, we will have that for you. We'll be sending it out ahead of time for your review. Any questions on this county health rankings data, or any comments or anything that stood out to you?
I was very surprised at the access to care ratios. How, because I know both health systems have been adding on primary care over the last few years. We've added up a lot of primary care providers, and yet the number is getting worse. So
we'll have to look. It's on their website where they pull the data from. I don't remember specifically where that one is from, but yeah, certainly. And any of these, you want more data, we can pull more and get you more of the details from the county health rankings and roadmaps folks. They're also always willing to come help present and answer any questions as well, too, if you would like that. We will probably have them come to the broader group for the community health assessment to be able to do that as well. But it's good to hear what stands out to you. And then to investigate why is there still an access to care problem? Yeah. Anything else stand out? Questions, comments, concerns? We'll certainly be pulling many more things together. This community health assessment's been going on, or the county health rankings and roadmaps has been going on for several years. So we'll be pulling out charts and graphs to sort of show longevity and over time how things have changed. In the chart that you received, it was just last year and this year, just for a quick snapshot by design. But we'll be looking much more deeply into that data. So over time, if you have any other questions, let us know, and we'll make sure that we look more deeply into that. And I have access to care down. We'll look at that one. All right. Tomorrow night is our food handlers class. We are very excited. Our environmental team will be presenting it. This is for people at the various farmers markets, Juneteenth, various events that happen around town where people come and they cook food for one or two times, or maybe just for the summer. And they're not necessarily a restaurant, so they're not licensed, but we certainly want to make sure that our food handlers that are bringing their grill out for the one-time festival get trained on proper food handling safety so that our community is safe and we don't have any foodborne illness going on there. So that is tomorrow evening in the Job Center. We're very excited. This was a big goal before COVID occurred, and now it's finally happening. So that's one of the good things now that's coming back to light. So we're very excited for the food handlers class. And we have lots of people, it's a free class, coming to that to learn for the community. You were also sent out the annual report that was sent as well with the situation report a week and a half ago. And just wanted to make sure if you had any questions or concerns on our annual report. Now, I know some agencies develop an annual report that's 30 pages long. We, by design, make it very, very short, a quick snapshot, because we know nobody in the community will ever read a 30-page document. So it was a very quick snapshot of all that we have done in the past year. And that is required by state statute. We have to turn that in by May 1st every year. So you guys will get that every year. Any questions or comments on that? All right. You were also sent by Karen all of the government contacts as requested at a former meeting. So you have all of those contacts information for future use. And Karen had sent out, I know we have had longstanding second Tuesdays at noon for our Board of Health meetings. We've had some absences lately that we just wanted to reassess and make sure second Tuesdays at noon was still an appropriate time for everybody. So please fill out the survey that Karen sent just to make sure that we can see if this is still a best time with minimal absences for everybody as well too. Just a couple other updates. We had a human trafficking training last Wednesday, mandatory for all staff, not only because we have the clinic and our home visitation nurses who definitely see things in homes, but our environmental team. They're out inspecting hotels and motels, and they see things happening too. There is human trafficking occurring in Kenosha County, and so we needed to make sure that our staff is trained and updated for what to look for and how to respond. So the training was very successful, and we all learned a lot. Heavy topic. So that happened last Wednesday. And in other news, our Title X funding was...
Jen, I'm sorry to interrupt, Jen.
No, that's fine.
Who did the human trafficking training?
Say that again?
Who did the training? Who did the training?
Rachel, oh, hold on. They are the Racine and Kenosha SANE nurses. Rachel's missing her last name and I can't find
it. Rachel Cortez. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
and some of the other partners that she works with. So, yeah, it was both giving us data and stories.
Just so you're aware, we have an anti-human trafficking coordinator with the Child Advocacy Centers.
And what's...
Because obviously we see a lot of that. So Esme is local for Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth.
What was
and,
her name?
Esmeralda Silva. Esme?
I believe they mentioned her. They're connected, so they were sort of giving us all the resources and how, yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure you know that we have that resource. So, you know, if you need some additional assistance with anything trafficking related, or anti-trafficking actually, please feel free to reach out and we can put you in contact with Esme.
I appreciate that, Rita. Thank you. Samantha Garcia is our nurse who has worked with this population for many, many years. And so I will have her reach out to you. She's sort of spearheading that for the whole health department. So thank you. Good stuff. Good stuff. Title X funding. We just found out yesterday that Title X funding was cut a little over $49,000. It got cut at the federal level, which passed on to the states having been cut, and now the locals are receiving the a cut. So we are figuring out what that means for our clinics and our reproductive health programs and services. So I will let you know more on that next month. But in case you heard news on that, I wanted to make sure you knew that. You had asked last time about having a meet and greet for all of our new county board supervisors and the city alderpersons, and the county executive's office just approved some dates for us. So I know we had talked about, especially Julia, where you were saying the evenings. So we picked two dates and times as many of you can come as possible to meet and greet with all of our new elected members. It will be May 18th from 6 to 7 p.m. and May 20th from 5 to 6 p.m. So two different dates, two different times, giving the options to some people. And we will be inviting all of them so that they have a choice between the two dates. So I know we had briefly talked about, do we separate the city alders from the county board supervisors? And it just sort of turned out we needed to be able to open up to anybody who wants to come to either of those. So we'll send you out the specific information. And if you're able to attend to meet and greet, that would be great. Thanks for requesting that. That was a really good idea. And the county executive was very pleased about that as well too. Any questions on the meet and greet?
Where will it be?
At the job center. So that will we'll do a quick tour of the clinic, a tour of the lab, and then we'll have time just for answering questions and showing around the health department and having them meet all of you Board of Health members.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then from the last meeting, you all had requested more on equity. So we decided to make it a standing item on the agenda from now on to ensure that we're talking about equity at every meeting. I mean, you all know that's in our vision statement. It's certainly a top priority from the State Health Department that we incorporate equity into all services and programs. Every grant is now asking for that, and grant reports and what we're going to do with regard to equity specific to each of our programs and services. One thing I just wanted to let you know, with regard to equity, the county has now hired their DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion specialist within the HR department. Her name is Kelsey Hubler, and she's coming to meet our executive team on Thursday. And so we'll be getting to know her, and also our equity strategist that you all have met, Kirsten Gunderson, will be meeting one-on-one with her to sort of to let her know. I mean, certainly because of all of our grant requirements, the health department is far ahead on equity and how we're incorporating various things. And so she'll let her know what we're doing with our strategic planning and data and all of that. So that will be happening this week as well. So we're excited for that.
I'll catch up to you.
Okay, Jen, so with the goal of adding it on the agenda, so that's the task, but what's the goal behind doing that?
Yeah, so the goal is to make sure, A, that you all know what we're doing, and B, that just like with the PACE campaign, that we make sure that we're bringing things for all of you. I think in the past, you know, so that we had the equity task force that was formed at the right at the start of the vaccination efforts for COVID to make sure that we were, from a COVID standpoint and vaccination standpoint, that we were looking at equity and how we were reaching out to our communities who are disproportionately affected by COVID hospitalization and death. And now that equity task force is moving more into a not just COVID realm, you know, how can we be more mobile with our services and looking at that? So for example, the PACE campaign floated through them. And certainly, you know, things need to float through you all as well. So this is our way of sort of connecting the dots between the Equity Task Force and the Board of Health.
And what's our working definition of equity?
Yes, and we are developing, because I see we have one of our county board supervisors on, we have been working on a quick equity plan that'll basically states what our working definition is. We're basically using the, hold on, let me pull up the source here, and including our equity statistics so that people know where our base is and where we're starting from with equity work. And that will be proofed through you all as well before that goes out. And I will find that source and send it to you because it's not popping up immediately for me.
Of course. No, thank you so much, because one of the things I always like to have a clear mind, are we talking about, is it being used synonymously, equity and equality? And so I always like to make sure that we're all on the same page. So it's awesome that there will be some working definitions, you know, kind of just reflecting on the question that Kenny just raised, as well as the questions I raised about the ACES thing, is that, you know, does that foster equality?
Absolutely. So yeah, the goal is to have that very soon for you, because we're getting those questions as well from our county board supervisors. So we want to make sure that we have something that we can show. And in addition, the Secretary of Health is coming to our Kenosha County Center May, and I didn't have this written down, so I apologize. I'm also looking this up on.
Jen's with me to a conference call, so I need to stop.
I'm going to have whoever that is mute, or if somebody can mute that, if that's okay. Is coming to do the thank you tour. You may have seen this around. on the national news, but they're coming on May 19th. You all should be receiving an invitation to that. And they're basically coming around to say thank you to public health for, you know, everything over the last 2 years with COVID. And you all are going to get a special invite to that on the 19th at, I believe, 1 o'clock. That hasn't been 100% confirmed yet, but you'll receive an invite straight from the secretary's office.
Christy's mother died Saturday morning, so that was kind of sad. And, you know,
All right, there it is.
Anything else, Jen?
Nope, that's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. Lock, I have one more question. So, Jen, about the equity thing and bringing it to the meeting, do you all think it would be a good idea to maybe have some suggestions for good questions to ask or to facilitate? If you guys are bringing this to us, how can we hold you all accountable, or how can we foster a good discussion, since we don't want it to be a watered down concept? I don't want it to be a watered down concept. So are there, I have a lot of thoughts that happen at once. So it doesn't happen in session, but it's happening now. So forgive me. Do you all think it would be good to have some guided questions that could keep that conversation alive, or to foster dialogue if you guys are bringing the equity discussion to us?
Yeah, that's a good question. So you mean questions that are sort of standard that we ask every time we bring something? Is that what you're...
Yeah, I mean, to be intentional about it, and you know, they definitely should be questions to foster stronger conversations, asking better questions, or do we foresee it just being a report back?
I mean, no, we definitely, I mean, you are the advisory body. We want all of the advice, right? So so I agree. And let me get with our equity strategist to sort of see what, you know, because I think that definitely is, and our health equity task force as well may have some suggestions on that. And if, we've certainly fostered rapport with them, that they give a lot of feedback. And I think that's where we definitely want the Board of Health to be able to review, certainly have some questions that foster, you know, the conversation, so that we can ensure that we're on the right track with that and hold us accountable.
Yeah.
It's
not to suggest nobody can think for themselves, but as a therapist, asking the right questions or the better questions can keep it at the forefront.
I love it. I love it. Well, let's figure that out. I will have Kirsten Health Equity Task Force and pull you in and try to figure out a good way to do that.
Thanks for considering.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Pritchett. So on to John with corporate counsel. He was on. Did we lose him?
Was he the person that was muted?
I think we lost him.
Okay. So then on to any other business or comments? Okay. So if you're interested in any of the yard signs or anything like that, contact Leanne and try to make it to at least one of the meet and greets, so we can get out and meet people and talk to them. And go enjoy the lovely weather.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate the meet and greet concept that you guys proposed, and you know, public health has been in a bit of a hot seat for the last 2 years. So for our electeds to meet all of you and see what the Board of Health does and how you all are would be certainly helpful to help benefit the public health mission.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.